Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Ken Go of the Oregonian will be joining us shortly. Lot to talk about on today's show. Man, we have so much to talk about. Major League Baseball, we're going to hear the words play ball, it looks like. I don't think that'll be the story when it comes to Major League Baseball. The story will be that baseball didn't get its act together. A 7.4 magnitude earthquake has hit Mexico. We're going to talk about earthquakes, tornadoes, and hurricanes on today's show. And by the way, if you're somebody who's doing a lot of video calls, I saw an interesting story about the patterns that people have developed from being on chronic video calls. Do you have some of these habits? I'm going to talk about them later. Also, Martha Ford, 94-year-old Martha Ford, has stepped down as owner of the Detroit Lions. It got me thinking about pro sports ownership. If Martha Ford could own the Lions, what team would you want to own? Talk about that later in the show. Ken Go of the Oregonian. He's versatile. He's talented. And he's joining us now. How are you, man?
Good. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing all right. 4 months ago. 4 months ago. What was different in your life than it is now?
The whole life's different. What's the same?
I know. It's so true. And I'm looking around. I'm going, like, could you have imagined maybe there wouldn't be football? Could you imagine... by the way, does it surprise you that the athletic departments in college have their margins are so thin that if they don't play football, many of them are facing a collapse?
Well, no, because for a long time now, they've spent every cent they took in, right? I mean, who is putting away a surplus? If you had extra money, you were building a nicer building or finding a better football coach or, you know, whatever. You didn't save money. So there were... Up to this point, there's been no incentive to do that. And now they're at a point where that income stream is not going to probably be what it was and you know, trouble. It's like your household budget, right? If you spend every cent you make all the time, then you're one catastrophe away from real problems. Catastrophe, one blown water heater.
Ken Go of the Oregonian joining us. What's been the impact in the track and field world? I saw some scuttlebutt today about visas and athletes that are stuck here or there. Has it impacted track and field in a different way?
Well, not to this point, but that's one way it certainly could, because in most of Europe, they seem to be on top of this thing. The United States, not so much. So there's a very good chance that there'll be some elite track meets in Europe late summer, early fall, that would include American athletes if Americans can get there. But if the European countries are not going to allow U.S. citizens in because of what's happening here with the virus, then certainly that will have a big impact on American track and field athletes who live here.
You had a really interesting piece on Portland State and how they're going to, with the football season approaching, how they're going to conduct their testing. What did you learn there?
Well, you know, I think they're pretty confident about what they have in place for their athletes at school and at practice. But the problem is, after the athletes leave campus, they lose control of them. Some other schools maybe have the ability to do a better job of being able to sequester athletes or have a better handle on what they're doing when they're not at school. But Portland State has a number of problems that, say, Oregon and Oregon State don't. For instance, one is a lot of football players aren't on full scholarship. So to pay the bills, to go to take their classes, to put food on the table, they need to find employment. So that goes from the contact tracing. Say one of their athletes tests positive. Now you've got to trace contacts. At Oregon State, that might mean anybody they live with or go to school with or on the team. On the team with them, but at Portland State, that might also include, Domino's Pizza or, wherever part-time job they might have found, Plaid Pantry. And you think of all the contacts then that the athlete might have been exposed to or exposed other people to and their places of business, and now it gets really difficult.
I keep thinking about them, and I guess they're going to test right away when student-athletes get to campus and then just monitor for symptoms. They won't test further unless somebody's got symptoms. I keep thinking that's like a recipe for 3 weeks later having a massive problem. Am I just being a pessimist there?
No, I mean, I think that's a big concern. They're going to have to test more than that, especially some of their non-conference games. I think when they play at Pac-12 schools, I think they open with Arizona and then play Oregon State next. They're going to have to test before they play those teams because they're going to have to satisfy Arizona and Oregon State that they're not bringing a bunch of positive cases onto the football field.
What are the odds that we're going to get cancellations? You see the Patriot League today saying, "Hey, look, we don't think we can do it," and there are some people scrambling around trying to find opponents. Is there a risk here that the Big Sky just goes, "Hey, we got four teams that can't play for a couple weeks," and you've got suddenly, Washington and Oregon State and others, Utah and Arizona, kind of looking around at each other, going, "Okay, we need to find opponents." Is that a possibility this college football season?
Yeah, no, it's a risk. And you look at the Big Sky's a real far flung conference too. You got Arizona, North Dakota, Washington, Oregon, California, Utah. I mean, there's all these different jurisdictions, and they all have their own rules too. So, I think it's a big problem with the Big Sky. Most of the Big Sky schools don't have the money that a lot of the big FBS programs do to be, as you pointed out earlier, to be able to test. Or the manpower to be able to monitor that some of these other schools do within their athletic department. So the odds that there's going to be a problem at a Big Sky school or a school at that level, even the group of five in the FBS, they don't have the athletic programs the same size as, say, at Oregon or Michigan do. So, big problem, big concern. There's at least a healthy chance that one of those teams or more of those teams or the whole conference is going to have a real problem. And at some point, if you can't guarantee the player's safety, then I don't think you can play. I mean, if your son is on the Portland State team and you have reservations about his safety, are you going to just cross your fingers and hope for the best, or are you going to get involved?
Patriot League teams are saying they will not fly to competitions, and with rare exceptions, they'll exclude overnight travel. Fordham was supposed to play at Hawaii, Colgate at Western Michigan. By the way, Colgate can still drive that. It's 600 miles one way, but they're really looking at trying to draw a circle around their league. Is that wise, or does that just create a ripple effect now? You've got problems at Hawaii and Western Michigan.
Well, maybe it's both. Maybe it's wise for the Patriot League, creates problems elsewhere. I think some of the smaller schools in California are talking about not leaving the state, too. And, again, one of the reasons for that would be that all the jurisdictions are different. So you might have different rules in California than you would in Arizona, or different rules in California than you do in Utah. So why leave the state? Why create that extra level of complexity to what's already a very complex problem?
Ken Go of the Oregonian is with us. Let's talk about the Oregon Ducks for a moment. Everyone's talking about Ohio State. They've got North Dakota State in that opener. North Dakota State has a very good quarterback. How concerning is that game, or is Oregon just too good for anybody who's not a major college football opponent?
I think it's a concern. I would expect Oregon to win because Oregon's just got more depth and you know, better, maybe not, maybe the top 12 to 15 North Dakota State players could play at Oregon, but Oregon's got 85 guys, all could play at North Dakota State. That doesn't mean North Dakota State can't give them problems. I remember Eastern Washington coming in with Cooper Kupp and really scaring to the Ducks a few years back. I think North Dakota State will be representative, but, you know, outcome of the game, I would expect the Ducks to win probably by a couple touchdowns.
The Ohio State game at Autzen Stadium, how much is lost if we are really talking about no fans at Autzen, or maybe 20%, which would amount to about 10,000 fans inside that stadium?
I feel this way. I assume you do. A lot of what makes college football is the atmosphere. You know, it's the marching bands, the fans, the chants. Game day experience at Autzen Stadium is awesome. I mean, I'm neutral. I don't root for a team one way or another, but it's hard not to think that the University of Oregon has down pat how to stage a football game. The stuff they put on the scoreboard, the way they get the fans involved, shout, you know, all that stuff. That's really what a huge part of what makes going there fun. And I expect not just for the fans, but also for the players. I remember last year, the Oregon players getting into shout too. It was such a big part of the game day experience. And it's got to be a huge letdown not to have that. I mean, you could put shout, I guess, on the big screen, but if nobody's in the stadium, it's going to fall flat, in my opinion.
I keep looking at Oregon and I see an outlier. You know, everybody's worried about finances. Of course, Oregon is as well. They've had layoffs. They've had, you know, salary reductions. But they've got Phil and Penny Knight. And I think a closing window, really, as you look at an opportunity with Washington in transition and USC's got Clay Helton. It feels like Oregon's time to me. Am I overstating that?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And you know, Utah's another program that had been on the rise, but they've got some issues now, too. A lot of their better players left at the end of last season. Their defensive coordinator's under fire for something I believe he tweeted a few years back that he never should have thought, let alone tweeted out there. There's issues everywhere. You know, Mike Leach left Washington State. You know, the guy they have coming in might turn out to be a very good coach, but that's an unknown. I mean, he was good at Hawaii, but this is a big step up. The window is definitely there now, and who knows for how much longer. You know, as you point out, things can change quickly. You know, Mario Cristobal could get a better offer. His top assistants could leave. That happens. We don't know. And right now we do know. We do know that there's an opportunity there. They're head and shoulders better than anybody else in the league. And, it's open. The window's there. Time is now.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian is our guest. At Oregon State, it's a quest. It's about bowl eligibility. And I think they've got different problems. I mean, if they can only get 9,000 in the stadium, they might be okay with only 13,000 season ticket holders. They're not going to offend as many people. But Jonathan Smith also feels like, I mean, he's pulling some local kids that are four-star guys. He's getting, you know, there's some excitement there. How far away from being legitimate are they? Are they right there?
I think they're there. You know, assuming their quarterback situation gets answered, you know, one of those guys they have contending for the starting job wins the job, I think they're very good. I think they're better than average. Not Oregon good, but like we just said, Oregon's probably the class of the conference. But good enough to be in that next group of teams right now. I think Jonathan Smith knows what he's doing. I think he's got a very good staff, good plan. As you point out, they're recruiting well. And the other thing they're doing is recruiting transfers well. They're bringing in transfers from other places that could step in and help them right now. I think they're a team to watch, you know, assuming we play.
Ken, the quarterbacks at both places, Tristan Jebbia at Oregon State and Tyler Shuck at Oregon, I think we got one start between the two guys, and nobody's really talking about that. Why are we not talking more about the fact that they're so inexperienced at quarterback?
Well, yeah, if people aren't talking about it, they probably should be. I was impressed with both guys based on what I've seen so far. But, yeah, that's not a full season. That's not, you know, getting sacked six times and picking yourself back up and making the next play. We don't know if those guys can do it over the course of the season. But they both got tools. I was impressed with both of them when I saw them play. I thought Jebbia did a really nice job for Oregon State in the Civil War last year. And when I've seen Chuck come in, I've been impressed with him, too. He's got poise. He's got the tools. He seems to have a good command of both the team and the offense. So I think they look like they're both solid players. But as you point out, they haven't proven it yet.
We are looking at college and professional sports that are trying to play. There's also a chance that high schools play or don't play in the fall when it comes to high school football. I'm thinking about sort of the domino effect of that. How do you recruit? Where is the advantage? Does it give advantage to Jonathan Smith and Mario Cristobal with in-state kids, given that, you know, there, we might be looking at another season where high school kids, and again, I'm knocking on wood, I'm hoping this doesn't happen, but I'm not sure if high school kids are going to be able to play. If college kids, if there's questions about college kids, it may mean that high school sports are off the table for a season.
Yeah, Mike. So I think a lot of high school recruiting now is done at camps and with videos and that kind of stuff. So I do think it's that obviously valuable, more valuable to see those kids playing games. But I don't think it's the end of the world recruiting wise if the season gets curtailed. As far as Oregon, I mean, Oregon and Oregon State are not going to make a living getting local kids. I mean, they'd love to have them, and they loved it when, you know, Brady Breeze comes in and is a big star and he's a local guy. But they're going to win or lose based on how they do out of state, particularly in California.
Ken Go of the Oregonian is our guest. Ken, you know, I look at your versatility and I'm in awe of it because you just float across track and field and college football and Portland State and Oregon State. And it's a fun conversation that we have. When you think back at the history at the paper, all the things that you've covered, what's the best, most enjoyable season you ever had covering something?
Oh boy, that's a hard question. You know, one season, I don't know if it was one season, but a group of seasons that I really enjoyed was covering Portland State when Pokey Allen was there. It's a long time ago, so a lot of your listeners may not remember what a character Allen was or what a breath of fresh air he was locally for people that were used to the way football had been done. He did it differently. He had fun. He had a saying that football should be fun, especially for the head coach. And you know, that's the way he coached. And his teams for the time were very wide open and explosive offensively. They gambled a lot on defense, which made a lot of big plays. And they won. I mean, they went to the national championship game twice at the Division II level, which was where they were at then. And they had, you know, they had a terrific recruiting advantage at Division II, which they exploited. I'm not sure if it's the same case now, but at the time, they could take a junior college player that hadn't graduated from junior college, and the Division I schools could not. So they had a number of players that were elite NFL caliber players that would have been at a Pac-12 school had they graduated from junior college. And they would go up and play Big Sky teams. Big Sky was a level up then and just beat the snot out of them. And it got to the point where Big Sky Conference would not schedule them. But and Pokey was so relaxed. I mean, he took the game seriously, but the way he dealt with the fans and the media, I'll just give you one example. The first game I covered, I'd spent the previous 5 years covering the Ducks, so I was sort of used to the way, sort of the button-down way that they did things at that level. And the game was over. I, as a lot of sports writers do, went down to the field for the last couple minutes and followed the team off the field and towards the locker room. And I was standing next to Pokey watching the players go in, and the last player went in. And I expected Pokey to go in as well because when you cover the bigger schools, there's a cooling-off period that they have before they'll talk to the media. And I looked at him, he looked at me, I looked at him, he looked at me. And I said, you can ask me a question?
Is it true he put a meteor in your yard?
Yeah, well, that, you know, that was, he had ran a great, and some of your listeners might remember this, great series of off-the-wall television commercials for season tickets, and that was one of them. So you didn't buy a Portland State season ticket, a big meteor was going to land in your backyard. I think the first one was he bet the sports editor of the Vanguard, the student paper at Portland State, that they would average 10,000 people. And he says, I'll bet my paycheck against yours. Of course, his paycheck was much more than the editor of the Vanguard. Yeah. So they ran a big campaign around that, which saved Pokey's paycheck. And by golly, the fans rallied and did save his paycheck barely. I mean, I don't know if the Vanguard editor ever requested a recount of the tickets. I think they averaged like 10,007 or something for that season. But.
I love that. Ken Go, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for sharing time with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. There's Ken Go of the Oregonian. Read him, follow him on Twitter. Leave it here. The Big Splash still ahead. Every day on the show, we give you a big splash. Today's no different.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where?
Down there.
Must be
the big splash.
Well, Marge Schott, former owner of the Cincinnati Reds and noted racist, received kind of a kind farewell when she passed away years ago, but the University of Cincinnati is doing something today. They're removing Marge Schott's name from the baseball stadium. University of Cincinnati saying, you know, maybe it's time. Maybe amid a social movement, awareness, maybe decency, Cincinnati Reds owner of, quote, racism and bigotry, end quote, is causing Marge Schott's name to be removed from their baseball stadium. University of Cincinnati, the Bearcats, no longer Marge Schott Stadium. Now, the university, by the way, Board of Trustees, they unanimously voted on this. And they had originally put her name on the stadium in 2006 after they got a $2 million donation from the Marge and Charles Schott Foundation. She died in 2004, but you may remember 1996, Major League Baseball banned her following her comments about Adolf Hitler. She had to sell her controlling interest in the Reds in 1999, and she was also banned for the 1993 season after making racist comments towards black players and team employees. She had a pretty clear record of racism and bigotry, and it's good that the University of Cincinnati, despite the $2 million donation, is stripping her name off the stadium. That's your big splash. Surprises me. That's where we are. We got some phone calls we'll take in the next hour. We'll have audio. All of that, much more ahead. You got the bald-faced truth. I appreciate out those of you out there who listen to this show, make it part of their day. Humbles me. Absolutely humbles me when I see the numbers, when I see the ratings, when I hear from you. You are an army. And you're out there together, and one of the byproducts of this pandemic has just been.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Faced
Truth. Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.